KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again.
Global stock markets are tumbling after President Trump announced sweeping tariffs on about 185 countries and what the European Union has described as a major blow to the world economy. We'll speak with economist Richard Wolff. Then to the campus of Columbia, where Jewish students chain themselves to university gates in support of Mahmoud Khalil, the former Columbia student protest leader now detained in an ICE jail in Louisiana.
And I'm chained to this gate today as a Jewish student and friend of Mahmoud Khalil's, demanding answers on how his name got to DHS and which trustee specifically handed over that information. We believe that there is a high chance that our new president, Claire Shipman, handed over that information, and we as Jewish students demand transparency in that process.
And then to upstate New York, where a mother and three children were detained when Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents raided a farm not far from the home of Trump's border czar, Tom Holman. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced plans to seize large sections of the Gaza Strip to create a new so-called security corridor that would cut off Rafah from the neighboring southern city of Khan Yunis. Israel already controls some 17% of Gaza's territory, according to an Israeli human rights group. Israel's reinvasion of Gaza came amidst a wave of deadly missile and artillery attacks that killed at least 56 people since dawn. Among the dead are 19 Palestinians killed in an Israeli airstrike on a United Nations clinic in Jabalia, being used as a bomb shelter. Victims included children and at least one infant.
What are these crimes of the occupation? What are these crimes? Show it to the entire world. Show it to all of humanity in the world, in the east and west of the earth. This is a one-week-old baby girl.
Other Israeli attacks today killed civilians in a displacement camp in Khan Yunis that Israel's designated as a so-called humanitarian zone. Israel's military has killed over 1,000 people in Gaza since unilaterally ending the ceasefire last month. Meanwhile, Israel launched a wave of airstrikes across Syria, including an attack on Daraa that killed at least 9 civilians, according to a local official. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said the strikes targeted Syrian military infrastructure, calling them a warning for the future. Syria's foreign ministry called the attacks a, quote, blatant violation of international law and Syrian sovereignty, unquote. In Yemen, leaders of Houthi say 5 people were killed in 2 waves of strikes on Hodeidah province on Wednesday. The Trump administration has launched near-daily attacks on Yemen since mid-March, when the Houthis resumed attacks on ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Hungary announced its withdrawing from the International Criminal Court as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in Budapest today for a 4-day state visit. The ICC issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu in November over war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. Human Rights Watch said Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban's welcoming of Netanyahu, despite the ICC warrant, is just, quote, Orban's latest assault on the rule of law, adding to the country's dismal record on rights, unquote. Here in New York, Jewish students chained themselves to Columbia University's gates Wednesday to demand the school reveal the names of trustees and Columbia officials who collaborated with federal immigration authorities in the arrest last month of student protest leader Mahmoud Khalil.
We as Jewish students demand transparency in that process. You know, as Jewish students, and to the Jewish people at large, being political pawns in a game is not a new occurrence. And that's something that we very much so are here to say, hey, you cannot weaponize anti-Semitism to harm our friends and peers.
Students continued their action into the early hours this morning, even after Columbia security and NYPD arrived on the scene to cut the chains and forcibly remove protesters. We'll hear more of their voices later in the broadcast. President Trump Wednesday unveiled sweeping global tariffs, including a 10% blanket tariff on all imported goods. In addition, U.S. trading partners, including the European Union, China, and Japan, will see even larger country-specific reciprocal tariffs. China now faces a total 54% tariff. Trump invoked emergency power so that he could bypass Congress.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day. I'm waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Gonna make it wealthy, good and wealthy.
Markets plummeted following the news as analysts warned it'll drive inflation, harm industry, could lead to a global trade war. World leaders decried the tariffs. This is European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
President Trump's announcement of universal tariffs on the whole world, including the European Union, is a major blow to the world economy. I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism.
In related news, four Republican senators joined with Democrats Wednesday to pass a resolution seeking to block Trump's 25% tariffs on Canada. The measure is not expected to pass the House, but offered a rare bipartisan rebuke of Trump's policies. The Republicans supporting the measure were Senators Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Mitch McConnell, and Rand Paul. Canada and Mexico were spared in Trump's latest round of tariffs, but remain subject to a previously imposed 25% tariff on many imports. We'll have more on Trump's trade war after headlines with economics professor and author Richard Wolff. The Trump administration's abruptly fired the entire workforce at the low-income home energy assistance program, which helps more than 6 million people pay their home heating and cooling bills. The cuts came amidst a mass purge of some 10,000 workers at the Department of Health and Human Services Tuesday. Separately, leaders of the National Endowment for the Humanities say Elon Musk's Doge operation has recommended slashing NEH's workforce by up to 80%. The independent federal agency provides grants to museums, universities, teachers, libraries, public radio and TV stations, nonprofits, and more. Meanwhile, disability rights groups have sued the Trump administration and Elon Musk over Doge's cuts to the Social Security Administration, which they say disproportionately impacted their community, violating their constitutional rights. This week, the Social Security Administration opened an investigation into a series of website crashes that prevented beneficiaries from accessing their online accounts at the MySSA portal at least five times last month, with some beneficiaries receiving inaccurate notices that they would no longer receive supplemental security income. Elon Musk has called Social Security, quote, the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time, unquote, and has proposed slashing up to $700 billion from Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and programs for the poor. Elon Musk is the world's richest man. On Wednesday, the White House dismissed reports that Elon Musk might soon leave his role in the Trump administration, saying his work with Doge will continue. A federal judge Wednesday dismissed New York Mayor Eric Adams' corruption case, granting a request from the Justice Department that was widely seen as a quid pro quo in exchange for Adams implementing Trump's mass deportation agenda. But U.S. Judge Dale Ho dismissed the case with prejudice, meaning the charges cannot be later revived, going against the wishes of the Justice Department, which sought to leave the door open for potential future prosecution. During a news conference Wednesday, Mayor Adams celebrated his legal victory by pitching a book written by new FBI director and prominent conspiracy theorist Kash Patel called Government Gangsters.
Jesus stepped in, and he uses who he uses. And New Yorkers stop me all the time in trying to find the rationale behind this. And I found it in this book. I'm going to encourage every New Yorker to read it. Read it and understand how we can never allow this to happen to another innocent American.
Mayor Eric Adams also announced he's leaving the Democratic Party and will seek re-election as New York mayor as an independent. A federal judge in California has ordered the Trump administration to temporarily restore legal aid to tens of thousands of vulnerable unaccompanied immigrant children. Plaintiffs who represent the children say Trump's halting of the legal assistance violated a 2008 anti-trafficking law. Meanwhile, members of the small New York community of Sackett's Harbor upstate are demanding the return of three children who were taken last week by ICE agents during a raid at a dairy farm. At least seven community members, including the children's mother, were arrested in that raid. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. Burma's ruling military junta has declared a temporary 20-day ceasefire as the death toll from last week's earthquake hit over 3,000 people. Armed resistance groups had previously also announced a temporary ceasefire. Rescue and relief efforts have been hampered by the recent slashing of U.S. foreign aid under President Trump. Many survivors in Mandalay, near the earthquake's epicenter, are in difficult-to-access areas and remain without homes, power, and phone service.
For now, we sleep on the ground with mattresses. Some people who still have mosquito nets set them up, while those who don't just sleep under the open sky.
At least 22 people died in Thailand, most of them killed in the collapse of a high-rise that was under construction when the earthquake struck. Authorities in Pakistan have given undocumented Afghan immigrants until next week to self-deport or face mass arrest, as officials seek to deport 3 million Afghans this year. It's a crackdown that's been widely condemned by the United Nations and human rights groups. Tens of thousands of Afghans were forced to flee Pakistan after the Taliban takeover in 2021, including many prominent women's rights activists. Some 20,000 Afghans were approved for resettlement, and the United States remain in limbo after Trump paused U.S. refugee admissions. Mediators from the African Union have arrived in South Sudan for urgent talks amidst growing fears of a new civil war following the recent arrest of the first vice president, Riek Machar, which ended a fragile power-sharing agreement. The government of President Salva Kiir has accused Machar of attempting to ignite a new rebellion. Rights groups are urging South Sudan's rival leaders to immediately de-escalate amidst mounting insecurity. This is UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Let's not mince words. What we are seeing is darkly reminiscent of the 2013 and 2016 civil wars, which killed 400,000 people. All the dark clouds of a perfect storm have descended upon the people of the world's newest country and one of the poorest.
President Trump's reportedly considering a deal that would avert a ban on TikTok by allowing the Chinese parent company ByteDance to keep control of the app's algorithm but lease it to a new U.S. spinoff entity. Lawmakers have claimed TikTok poses a national security concern, but critics of the ban say it's motivated by anti-Chinese bias and is a threat to free speech and some users' livelihoods. The pause on the ban expires Saturday. Amazon also made a late bid to buy TikTok, though some reports say it's been rejected by Trump officials. In Arizona, hundreds of community members gathered to mourn Emily Pike, a murdered 14-year-old indigenous girl, as she was laid to rest over the weekend on the San Carlos Apache Reservation, where she was from. Emily Pike was reported missing in January after running away from her group home. Her remains were found a few weeks later on Valentine's Day. Emily Pike's loved ones are demanding answers and justice for the indigenous teen. And Mario Joseph, a prominent Haitian human rights lawyer, has died in a car accident at the age of 62. Joseph was an attorney at the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, represented many political prisoners and other victims of human rights abuses. He led the prosecution in the trial of the 1994 Roberto massacre, which saw military and paramilitary forces attack and kill at least two dozen people who'd taken part in demonstrations supporting Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who'd been overthrown in a coup 3 years earlier. Democracy Now! Traveled to Haiti in 2010 following the devastating earthquake, where we spoke with Mario Joseph.
The way the earthquake hit, it didn't discriminate. That's a good example for us to look at in Haiti. And stop with this exclusionary system. It's true, a lot of poor people were touched by this. But even people with big houses or small houses, everybody's living in the street now. This is why we have to begin in the system of exclusion for everybody to participate in the country's life.
To see our interviews with Mario Joseph, as well as our coverage of Haiti over the years, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we speak to economics professor Richard Wolff about President Trump declaring a trade war on the world. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Global stock markets are tumbling after President Trump unveiled the biggest hike in global tariffs in modern U.S. history, including a 10% blanket tariff on all imported goods from about 185 countries. In addition, many U.S. trading partners, including the European Union, China, and Japan, will see even higher tariffs. China now faces a total 54% tariff. Trump announced the plan during a speech in the Rose Garden at the White House.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day, waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Gonna make it wealthy, good and wealthy. For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike. American steel workers, auto workers, farmers, and skilled craftsmen, we have a lot of them here with us today. They really suffered gravely. They watched in anguish as foreign leaders have stolen our jobs, foreign cheaters have ransacked our factories, and foreign scavengers have torn apart our once beautiful American dream.
The impact of Trump's tariffs are expected to be felt around the world. While Trump claims the tariffs will boost the U.S. economy, many economists fear it could lead to a recession or worse. Trump's trade war could also shift global alliances as countries seek new trading partners. China, Japan, South Korea have already announced plans to increase trading ties and coordinate their response to Trump's tariffs. We begin today's show with Richard Wolff, professor of economics emeritus, University of Massachusetts Amherst, visiting professor in the graduate program in international affairs at the New School. He's the founder of Democracy at Work and hosts a weekly national TV radio program called Economic Update, the author of a number of books, including most recently Understanding Capitalism and The Sickness is the System, When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. Professor Wolff, it's great to have you with us again. Well, start off by responding to, and were you surprised, shocked, or do you guess that, well, about 185 countries were going to see increased or tariffs?
On the one hand, we knew something like this was coming. On the other hand, the sweep and the scope of it does make you stop. Mr. Trump is right. It is a changing moment in American history and world history. But I think his representation of what's going on is completely fantastical and has only to do with the self-promotion that he is engaged in most of the time. It was never foreigners who did it to us, this notion of the United States as a victim. We have been one of the greatest beneficiaries in the last 50 years of economic wealth, particularly for people at the top, just like him. It has nothing to do with foreigners taking advantage of us. This attempt to make himself strong and powerful relative to others, to blame the foreigner, these are cheap shots that a real president wouldn't do. And there's the most important point. The American economy is in trouble. The American empire is in decline. We don't want to discuss it in this country. We engage in denial, and instead we are striking out at other people, a sad way of handling a decline. The British Empire declined before us, so did all the others. We are now at that point. We had a great 20th century. 21st century is different. You have to face those problems. That's not being done. What's being done is to say we have difficulties, but they're all somebody else's fault, and we're going to solve it by punishing them. I would like to point out, as you suggest quite rightly, Amy, that the rest of the world is not going to sit by. The United States does not have the power it had in the 20th century. It is not in the position it seems to imagine itself. When the Secretary of the Treasury added to Mr. Trump's comments that he warned the rest of the world not to retaliate, that would imply that if they do, there would be escalation. Yes, he said, there will be escalation. Well, nothing will guarantee more escalation than if they do nothing, because then it's an invitation to Mr. Trump to keep doing it as each of these efforts doesn't work.
Given how dramatic this was yesterday, is it possible he was deciding this to the very last second as they put this off? And explain exactly. You're a professor, you're a teacher. Most people don't even realize how tariffs work.
Okay. A tariff is a tax. It's just a particular tax that got that name. It used to be called import duty. All it means is when something comes into the United States that was produced outside and is brought in to be sold, it has to pay a tax, as literally as it crosses our border into our country. It is paid by the American company that brings it in, which may pass it on to the consumer, usually what happens, and the tax goes to Uncle Sam. It goes to Washington. Mr. Trump loved to suggest that tariffs were paid by the others, a little bit like Mexico would pay for the wall. Never happened. It's not going to happen here either. It's an American tax. Is there something remarkable that clues you in to how big a change this is, that the Republican Party, which has branded itself as the anti-tax party for a century, is now imposing the most massive tax imaginable? Why this big change? Because we have big, big problems, and this kind of slapping the rest of the world is an attempt to solve a little bit of them, but it is not going to work because we don't have the power to do it anymore.
I want to go to UAW President Sean Fain, who supports Trump's new tariffs, saying last week, We applaud the Trump administration for stepping up to end the free trade disaster that's devastated working class communities for decades. Fain spoke Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation.
We've seen over 90,000 manufacturing facilities leave the United States. We've seen in the big three alone in the last 20 plus years, 65 plants have closed. Look, tariffs aren't the total solution. Tariffs are a tool in the toolbox to get these companies to do the right thing, and the intent behind it is to bring jobs back here and invest in the American workers. If they're going to bring jobs back here, you know, they need to be life-sustaining jobs where people can make a good wage, a living wage, have adequate health care, and have a retirement security, and not have to work 7 days a week or multiple jobs just to scrape to get by paycheck to paycheck.
Well, while UAW President Sean Fain praised Trump's tariffs, he also said he had great concerns about President Trump's move to eliminate contracts for 700,000 federal workers, the firing of workers at the National Institute of Health and other agencies.
I was a bit disappointed. I like John Fain, many of us do, but this was disappointing to say, basically, I will support the president because he does something that might help my union, even though Sean Fain knows, as most economists do, that if you put a tax on the goods coming in, they will go up in price because we have to pay that tax now. And that will lead to domestic producers able to raise their prices because their competitors from abroad are stuck with this tax. So we expect a boost to inflation, which is going to hurt the working class of this country in a very serious way, especially if it builds on itself, which often happens when you do tariffs like this. And I want to remind everyone, including Sean Fain, that the auto workers also represent workers in places that need export markets, that produce in America and sell abroad. When those countries retaliate, as they likely will, we will lose export markets, and that will mean fewer jobs. And no one, let me stress, no one now knows whether the jobs lost from this trade war will be greater or smaller than any jobs that are gained. It is a big risk being taken by Mr. Trump, and if it doesn't go well, it'll be very bad for the American economy. It will produce the recession folks are worried about, because if the prices go up, people buy less, and that loses jobs. When you look at all of this, this is an incredibly risky effort to blame the world, punish the world, and then cross his fingers, which is what he's doing, hoping it comes out all right. Reminds me of the football metaphor. This is a Hail Mary pass. You throw it down the field. You hope it bounces into your team's hands. But that's all it is, a long shot. And it's a sign of how troubled the American economy now is.
If you can put this in the bigger picture, talk about the tax cuts and how they fit into the tariffs, something like $4 trillion in tax cuts and who benefits. And then talk about the other issues that President Trump keeps saying that they're not going to touch, even though what many call his co-president, Elon Musk, whether he steps back from being, you know, giving speeches or not, going after Social Security, issues like Medicaid.
Let me start with the tax issue. The biggest single thing that Trump did in his first presidency was the tax cut of December 2017. And when that tax cut was written into law, it had a sunset. It expires this year, 2025. If that expiration is allowed to happen, corporations and the rich, who were the big beneficiaries back then, will face a big tax cut. He doesn't want to do that because that's his base, that's his donor support. He doesn't want to have those taxes go back up. Well, then what is he going to have to do? If he keeps on spending and he doesn't let those taxes go back up, he's going to have to borrow trillions, as we have been doing. He doesn't want to be the president who keeps borrowing trillions, in part because the rest of the world is a major creditor of the United States, and they're not going to continue to do it the way they have. So he's in a jam. He has to do something. So his hope is to savage the expenditures in this country. Look what he's doing. Mr. Musk stands there with a chainsaw to give us the clear implication. I'm going to solve the problem on the backs of the working class. I'm firing them all. I don't care what the rest of the working class suffers. I'm going to fire all these people without notice, without plan. Calling this efficient is a silly joke. An efficient process takes time, takes experts. You're not doing that. You're just wholesale firing. Calling that efficiency is an attempt to fool people that shouldn't make any difference. Mr. Trump is now in a jam. He can't get out of this without in some way solving the problem that has been built up. And there is no way other than the one he's doing, because it's the last gasp of how to take away from the mass of the people the ability to borrow. I mean, let's be honest. If you put a tariff, you make everything coming in from abroad more expensive. That means people will buy less of it. They'll shrink their standard of living. If American companies take advantage of the tariff, which they always do, by raising their prices, that will also hurt the working class. You are immiserating your workers in order to try to solve the problem you haven't solved before. But here's the irony that may in the end come back to haunt us. Europe has been unable to unify under the umbrella of American alliances. The enmity of the United States is bringing Europe together better than the alliance was able to do. And as you pointed out, very important, China, Japan, and South Korea, with long histories of animosity and tension, are getting together to cope with this. Wow, we are unifying the whole world. If you want the big picture in my judgment, after World War II, George Kennan taught us about containment. We're going to contain the Soviet Union. The irony, which the philosopher Hegel would enjoy, we are becoming contained. We are isolating ourselves. The votes in the UN are the United States alone, or the United States and Israel and two or three other countries. The isolation politically, the isolation now economically. We are the rogue nation for the rest of the world. We may not want it, we may not agree, but it doesn't really matter if that's how they perceive us. And that's what's happening.
You talked about South Korea, Japan, and China joining together. One of the biggest announcements of tax cuts was against Taiwan. It's just a little more complicated for Taiwan to join that group.
And also another one was Vietnam, which got a very heavy whack. I mean, is there no recognition of what the United States did to that country? Maybe you wouldn't want to crush them with this kind of a thing after... I mean, as I'm saying, this is a change. This is a sign to the world that as the United States empire declines, this is a nasty place that's going to, you know, gesture and thrash around doing damage everywhere as it copes with its own decline.
Former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis recently wrote a piece headlined Donald Trump's Economic Master Plan. He wrote, quote, "This is what his critics don't understand. They mistakenly think he thinks that his tariffs will reduce America's trade deficit on their own. He knows they won't. Their utility comes from their capacity to shock foreign central bankers into reducing domestic interest rates. Consequently, the euro, the yen, and the renminbi will soften relative to the dollar. This will cancel out the price hikes of goods imported into the U.S. and leave the prices American consumers pay unaffected. The tariff countries will be, in effect, paying for Trump's tariffs." Do you agree with that, Professor Wolf?
No, even though Yanis and I do a lot of work together, so normally I defer to him. He's wonderful in his analysis. I don't think this is correct. Is it a possible outcome? Yes. You know, we're in a situation, let me put it this way. Tariffs are not new. They've been around for hundreds of years. If you teach a course in international economics, which I've done, you tell students, here are 1,000 books, here are 5,000 articles. We know. And the answer is, when you impose a tariff, you don't know what the outcome is because it depends on everything else going on. Interest rates, exchange rates of currencies, rising or falling economies around the world. You can't know in advance. It's a very risky thing, which is why for the last 50 years, we have had administered by the U.S. something called free trade or neoliberal or globalization. All of that is over now. The United States can't win anymore in that system, so it is reverting to economic nationalism. And that's a fundamental shift that throws the world. It was the accepted wisdom for 50 years, the last 50 years, not to do what Mr. Trump is doing now. If you want, you can think that everybody who thought that way for 50 years was wrong, and Mr. Trump, the genius, is correct. But that would be a long shot. Better bet, he's trying to save his own political life, and he's trying to cope, to his credit, with a declining economy without having to admit that that's the case. This won't end well. It normally doesn't. And what we're going to see is the fighting against one another of the Europe bloc, the Asian bloc, the American bloc, at a time when the United States is weaker than it has been economically and politically. Look at the debacle in the Ukraine as well. The misunderstanding that the Russians could turn to the Chinese and the Indians to cope with the costs of that war in a way that hadn't been calculated and is turning out to shape the outcome. And it's not a question of which side you're on, but just watching how it lines up. That's the problem.
30 seconds. As you often talk about, are you seeing this as the beginning of the end of American empire?
Yes. I think we are already in 10, 12 years of that decline. It can't. Here's a single best statistic. If you add up the GDP, you know, the total output of goods and services in a year for a country, of the United States and its major allies, the G7, it's about 28% of global output. If you do the same thing for China and the BRICS, it's about 35%. They're already a bigger block of economic power than we are. Every country in the world thinking about building a railroad or expanding its health program, they used to send their people to Washington or London to get help. They still do. But when they're done, they send the same team to Beijing, New Delhi, Sao Paulo, and they often get a better deal. The world is changing. And the United States could cope. As with alcoholism, you have to admit you have a problem before you're in a position to solve it. We have a nation that does not yet want to face what this all adds up to.
Richard Wolff, Professor Emeritus of Economics, University of Massachusetts Amherst, visiting professor at the Graduate Program in International Affairs at the New School here in New York, founder of Democracy at Work, hosts weekly national TV radio program called Economic Update. Among his books, Understanding Capitalism. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Amy.
This is Democracy Now! When we come back from break, an update on a story we've been following closely. Jewish students at Columbia University chain themselves to the university gates. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Here in New York City, Jewish students chained themselves to gates at Columbia University Wednesday in support of Mahmoud Khalil, the former Columbia student protest leader, now in an ICE jail in Louisiana. On March 8th, federal agents detained Khalil at his university-owned apartment building, even though he's a legal permanent resident of the United States. They revoked his green card. I went up to Columbia yesterday and spoke to some of the students at the protest.
No. Hi, my name is Carly. I'm a Columbia SEPA graduate student, second year, and I am chained to this gate today as a Jewish student and friend of Mahmoud Khalil's, demanding answers on how his name got to DHS and which trustee specifically handed over that information. We believe that there is a high chance that our new president, Claire Shipman, handed over that information, and we as Jewish students demand transparency in that process.
What makes you think that the new president, Shipman, gave over his information?
There was a Forward article with that leak, and there has not been transparency from the Columbia administration to Jewish students when they claim that they are doing all of this to protect Jewish students. We would like to be consulted in that process instead of being spoken for. You know, as Jewish students, and to the Jewish people at large, being political pawns in a game is not a new occurrence, and that's something that we very much so are here to say, hey, you cannot weaponize anti-Semitism to harm our friends and peers.
And talk about being chained, and are you willing to risk arrest or suspension or expulsion from Columbia?
Yeah, I mean, just for speaking out for Palestine on Columbia's campus, you know that you are risking arrest and expulsion. That is the precedence they have sent, and that is something that we all know at this point. I mean, we are now in a situation where, for many of us, our good friend is in ICE detention, and as Jewish students, we feel we need to do more.
How did you know Mahmoud Khalil? You said you're at SEPA. What are you studying there?
Yeah, so I'm a human rights student, and we were classmates. We were classmates and friends, and it's been a deeply troubling few weeks, and, you know, everyone at SEPA, the students at SEPA, we really are just hoping for his safe return, and for me as a graduate in May, I truly hope we get to walk together at graduation.
Did he hear that you were out here, and did he send you a message?
Yes. So it has gotten back to Mahmoud that Jewish students are out here chained to the gate, and he did send a message that I read earlier that expressed his gratitude.
Can you tell me what he said?
Yes, I can pull up the message. I don't want to misquote him. Okay. The news of students chaining themselves to the Columbia gates has reached Mahmoud in the detention center in Louisiana, where he's currently being held. He knows what's happening. He was very emotional when he heard about it, and he wanted to thank you all and let you know he sees you.
My name is Sarah Boris. I am a senior at Barnard College.
Why a Jewish action right now?
So the government, when they abducted Mahmoud, they literally put, Donald Trump put out a post that said, Shalom Mahmoud. They are saying that this is the name of Jewish safety. But there is a reason that it is for white Jews that were on that fence, or that were on that gate. And that's because we are not the ones that are being targeted by the government. It is Muslim students, Arab students, Palestinian students, immigrant students that are being targeted.
How do you respond to those who say the protests here are anti-Semitic?
I have been involved in these protests for my last 2 years here. The community of Jewish students that I have found is one of the most wonderful in my life. To call these protests anti-Semitic honestly degrades the Jewish religion by making it about a nation state instead of the actual religion itself.
My name is Shay. I'm a junior at Columbia College. I am here for the same reason.
You're wearing a keffiyeh and a yarmulke.
Yes. That's standard for me.
Are you willing to be expelled?
If the university decides that that is what should happen to me for doing this, then that is on them. I would love to not be expelled, but I think that my peers would also have loved to not be expelled. I think Mahmoud would love to not be in detention right now. I obviously worked very hard to get here. So did Mahmoud. So did everyone else who has been facing consequences. And while I obviously would prefer to, you know, not get expelled, this is bigger than me. This is about something much more important. And it ultimately is in the hands of the university. If they want to expel me for standing up for my friend, for other students, then that is their choice.
ICE off our campus now!
ICE off our campus now!
We want justice, you say how?
We want justice, you say how?
Answer our demands now!
Answer our demands now!
My name is Miriam Alwan.
I'm a senior at Columbia. I'm also a Palestinian, and I'm friends with Mahmoud. I'm here in solidarity with my Jewish friends, who are in solidarity with all Palestinian students and Palestinians facing genocide in Gaza. We are all here today because we miss our friend, and it's inconceivable to us that the Board of Trustees are reported to have handed his name over to the federal government, and the fact that these Board of Trustees have now taken over the university. Just yesterday, the University Senate at Columbia released an over 300-page report called the Sundial Report, which reveals that the Board of Trustees has completely endangered both Palestinian and anti-Zionist Jewish students in the name of quashing dissent and cracking down on protests like never before, eroding shared governance, academic freedom. And so this has been a long-standing process of over 1.5 years to get us to the point where we are today, where people are getting kidnapped from their own campuses. And we can't just sit by and let the federal government do whatever they want to our own university without standing up against it. So whatever we can do.
And what does it mean to you that it's Jewish students who have chained themselves to the gates?
It means a lot to me, especially because of all of the rhetoric that surrounds these protests, saying that we're violent or threatening, when from day one, I was part of Students for Justice in Palestine when it was suspended, and we were working alongside Jewish Voice for Peace from day one, and the media just completely twisted the narrative. So the fact that my Jewish friends are still to this day fighting, no matter what the personal cost is to them, I've seen the way that the university has delegitimized their Jewish identity, put them through trials saying that they're anti-Semitic when they are proud Jews, and they've taught me so much about Judaism. So it just means a lot to see like the solidarity between us even almost 2 years later now.
My name's Aharon Dardik. I'm a junior here at Columbia, and we're here to protest the trustees putting students in danger and not taking accountability.
Why the chains on your wrists?
We, as Jewish students, chained ourselves earlier today to a gate on campus, and we said that we weren't going to leave until the university named who it was amongst the trustees who collaborated with the fascist Trump administration to detain our classmate, Mahmoud Khalil, and try and deport him.
Where are you originally from?
I'm originally from California, but my family moved to Israel-Palestine.
I think that's like a much later.
And being from Israel-Palestine, your thoughts on what's happening there?
There's never a justification for killing innocent civilians and for war crimes and genocide that's being committed now. And I know many, many other people there who are leftist Israeli activists who are doing their best to end the occupation, to end the war and the genocide, and to end Israeli apartheid, but they need more support from the international community, which currently sees supporting Israel as synonymous with supporting the fascist Israeli government that's perpetrating this genocide, that's continuing the occupation.
Voices from a protest Wednesday when Jewish students at Columbia University chained themselves to university gates in support of Mahmoud Khalil, the former Columbia student protest leader, now detained by ICE in a Louisiana jail. Students continued their action into the early hours of this morning through the rain, even after Columbia security and New York police arrived on the scene to cut the chains and forcibly remove protesters. Special thanks to Laura Bastillas. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn now to look at how a family of four, a mother and three children, were detained by Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents in a raid not far from the home of Trump's border czar, Tom Homan. The raid took place last Thursday at the North Harbor Dairy, near the town of Sackett's Harbor, New York, a small town with a population of about 1,300. It's in upstate New York, in western New York. In total, seven people were detained, including the mother and her three kids, who were enrolled in the local public school, a third grader, a 10th grader, and an 11th grader. Witnesses say they were all handcuffed before being removed from a home at the dairy farm and put in a van. ICE has confirmed they were then taken to a recently reopened family detention center in Texas. This is Jennifer Gaffney, the superintendent of Sackett's Harbor Central School District.
As part of the process of detaining the person for whom the warrant was issued,
We had three students who got caught up in that mess and subsequently taken and detained. We are all very, very, very well connected with our students who are missing. And these students are friends, they're classmates, they're good students, and they're part of the fabric of our community, and we want them back in our classrooms.
The superintendent was interviewed by local ABC upstate. ICE agents said the mother and children were collateral arrests and that the raid on the dairy farm was related to a warrant to arrest of a South African man allegedly dealing in child pornography. This Saturday, community members are holding a rally starting at the town's Welcome Center, marching to the home of Trump border czar Tom Homan, who's a native of the area. He spoke to local news station WWNY and said he was looking into the raid and the possibility the family could be released and returned to Sackett's Harbor.
This was not, you know, it wasn't a raid. It was a search warrant execution in a house where a family was found and who entered the country illegally. They're under DACA control. So ICE is doing everything by the book. Border Patrol did everything by the book. And once the investigation gets to the place where we no longer have an interest in this family, then the decision will be made on release. So as far as Sackett's Harbor, I grew up, as you know, in West Carthage, not too far from your family. I love the North Country. I want to retire in the North Country. It's unfortunate that it brings undue necessary attention to a small town that I love, small town that I'd like to retire in.
For more, we're joined by Murad Ouda, the president of the New York Immigration Coalition, helping residents as they call for ICE to release this family. Murad, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you explain what happened to this family of four, almost next door neighbors to Holman? The third grader, the two high school kids and their mom were handcuffed and taken away?
Well, first, thank you for having me. It's really unfortunate to see this family who, in the dark of morning, were snatched from their beds, arrested, and then detained, and then disappeared. Similarly, we've been seeing this happen across the country, but even more so appalling that ICE figured that it was important that they arrest these children and their mother, which they had no warrant to enter their home, which they did, as well as ensuring that they not only arrested them, but they moved them over 1,800 miles away from their home and their community. So it's been incredibly heartening to see the local community of Sackett's Harbor rally in support of this family and their students. But we're all calling for the same thing, which is the immediate release and return of this family back to New York.
So what are their rights? It's interesting. Homan has been so fierce in his rhetoric against immigrants. But now that people in his community, it sounds like he's beginning to back off.
Well, his community has been loud and clear. They are not in support of these warrantless arrests. They are not in support of family separation or child detainment. You have these three children and their mother now sitting in what is, in essence, a jail and a prison in Texas, and continuing to parrot these talking points as if they are, as if ICE and him are in the right, when we know that they're in the wrong. This family actually was going through the immigration system as they were told to, following the process and the steps that was dictated to them by the immigration court. And now, instead of waiting for their court date, they are sitting in a family detention center in Texas awaiting their fate, which is really horrendous. And again, we're calling on their immediate release and for them to be sent back to New York.
So there's a protest for Saturday at 2 plan, and the mayor of Sackett's Harbor says they're going to declare a state of emergency as they march to Homan's house.
I think that this case specifically has drawn a lot of interest and outrage from the local community as well as the surrounding areas. North Country is a beautiful part of New York State. It is hundreds of miles away from New York City, but even more so in a community of Sackett's Harbor of, 1,300 or so residents. They are all outraged. This is a farming community. And even the farmer who this action happened on his property is also outraged. And I think in this moment, what they are demanding is they want their kids to come back to them. These are their students. These are their friends. These are their neighbors. And they're incredibly, incredibly horrified that this happened to begin with. And I don't know if anyone can imagine a third grader being arrested or other kids being arrested simply because of, you know, ICE wanting to meet their quota of the day.
And there wasn't a deportation order, and they were showing up at court for their various hearings.
Yes, there was no order, there was no warrant, and they were still navigating the immigration system.
I also want to ask you about New York Mayor Eric Adams, who today is making his first mayoral campaign appearance of 2025 after a federal judge dismissed his corruption case, granting a request from the Justice Department that was widely seen as a quid pro quo in exchange for Adams implementing Trump's mass deportation agenda. But the judge, Dale Ho, dismissed the case with prejudice, meaning the charges cannot be later revived, going against the wishes of the Justice Department, which sought to leave the door open for potential future prosecution, perhaps if Adams didn't do what they wanted. The judge wrote, "Everything here smacks of a bargain, dismissal of the indictment in exchange for immigration policy concessions," unquote. Earlier today, Adams announced he plans to run for re-election as an independent instead of as a Democrat. Your assessment of what's going on here, Murat?
You know, I think this doesn't really change very much. There was obviously, as per the AUSAs who quit because they refused to dismiss these charges, that there was
when
a
you
quid
say
pro quo.
AUSAs, you mean assistant U.S. attorneys, one after another, conservative attorneys saying they did not want to drop the charges against the mayor.
Yeah, and that their case was based on facts. You know, we, as myself and my organization, had never called for his resignation because he was charged, because we believe, although he doesn't believe this for our community, but we believe every single person in this country has the right to due process, including the mayor. But what transpired here was not that. And, you know, we echo the sentiments of the judge in saying that there was a bargain struck here. And we don't know what that is, but the allusion that has been made through the assistant U.S. attorneys and their comments is that this is a deal that was cut to ensure that the mayor supports the Trump administration's mass deportation plan, which we are completely against, because that is nothing but actually horrifying for our families, negatively impacting our communities, and it will gut our local economy. So the mayor has a tough road ahead. I think that if he does try to collude with immigration enforcement against local law, we're going to fight tooth and nail and work with our partners in the New York City Council to ensure that we continue to defend and protect our communities.
Murata Walda, before we go, I wanted to ask you, as a Palestinian American, a leader in the immigration rights community, your thoughts on what happened last night. The Jewish students and the Israeli American student at Columbia University chained themselves to the gates of Columbia, demanding to know who in the administration or on the board of trustees pointed the finger at Mahmoud Khalil, who's in prison in an immigration jail in Louisiana. A judge in New Jersey ruled his case should be held in New Jersey, dealt with in New Jersey. Not clear what's going to happen to him in Louisiana. His wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, a dentist here in New York, is about to give birth to their first child. Your response to all that's taking place?
You know, Mahmoud Khalil has been was the first student who was detained by this administration and disappeared. Now there are several others who are in the same situation as him. Mahmoud Khalil was, as many people know, was a student at Columbia. And, you know, when I was on your show last discussing this, I mentioned that there was a forward report that mentioned that the Columbia institution actually, it seemed as if it was colluding with immigration enforcement, which is incredibly abhorrent. This is not something that any institution should be doing in working with immigration and customs enforcement on wrongfully detaining and removing their student. So kudos to the students continuing to protest for his release and demanding accountability in the university.
And you were referring to the Jewish newspaper, The Forward. Murad Awada, yes. Thank you so much for being with us, president of the New York.